All the 49ers, holdouts, and injuries, they're hurting one person and one person alone. The most important person on the team.
I thought you were about to say some 49ers super fan.
No, Brock Purdy. Hey, welcome to the show. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. So glad to have you on this Wednesday. It hurts Purdy. And, you know, it's funny, Pearl, because we've been hearing some things out of San Francisco about Purdy. Oh, he's been up and down in training camp. Obviously didn't have a great preseason game. But we're going to say none of that matters because it's just preseason and we've seen Brock Purdy deliver on some of the biggest stages. But you got to think that not having your left tackle out there and Trent Williams, who's holding out, you just lost another offensive lineman in John Feliciano, the veteran who Kyle Shanahan won't even tell us what he's getting surgery on and being totally cagey. Then you have Brandon Ayuk, who is Purdy's most, I would say, favorite, one of his most reliable targets. Just look at the third down numbers and how much Brandon Ayuk was keeping drives alive for the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey's hobbling. George Kittle had off-season surgery where he lost 30 pounds. Thankfully, he's back in the mix. But all of this stuff, to me, all it does is really hurt one person and kind of stymies a bit that one person, and that's Purdy. And Purdy is the most important person on the offense. I know we, you know, I may poke holes in, is McCaffrey really the MVP of the team or is it Brock Purdy? Ooh. We talked about that, but Purdy's the most important person. He's the one who makes it go. And all of this offseason turmoil only comes back on him and hurts him as he's trying to get ready for his third season in the NFL.
Well, it might hurt him short term, but long term, like, what is this about? Is this about week one against the Jets or is this about building a great team? Because they're not doing anything that's not in their long term best interest. Like, they're not going back and forth with Brandon Ayuk just for the fun of it. They're trying to build an awesome team. And Trent Williams, listen, this happens. I think everything they're doing, we're kind of like piling on the Niners. Like, what is the individual mistake? Honestly, apparently, Josita Anderson hinted that they offered more than the Steelers for Ayuk. Like, I think they're right where the rest of the league is on Ayuk. Are they really screwing this up? Don't you want to, like, we keep on killing them for all these moves. Aren't they doing the best thing long-term? They're trying to build a 10-year program here with Brock Purdy. And you mentioned John Feliciano got hurt. This guy that filled in has been dominating my social field. Dominic Puniz, this left guard, he was a tackle that is apparently just untouchable.
But still a rookie.
I don't know. It feels like the Niners got this crazy out of nowhere rookie class again. We forget that they were smart enough to get all these guys in the first place. Why aren't we giving them credit that they can do smart things out? They built the most talented team in the league, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. Maybe we should give them more of the benefit of the doubt. Like, they can find a new. We saw this kid, Jacob Cowan, came out. It was unbelievable right in the preseason game. It's like, where is that dude come from? I never barely heard of him.
Another rookie. Ricky Pearsall, the other rookie, has been hurt. So here's the thing about that, right? You have all these players who are making all this money for the 49ers, and you haven't even paid Purdy yet. So I think there's kind of two schools of thought here. When we talk about these windows, you know, it's like your window's kind of now before. I think there's always an inevitable, doesn't have to necessarily be a rebuild, but there's always going to be an inevitable, like the Bills do. This is, you hear this a lot with GMs and stuff. Like, eventually the credit card bill is going to be due. You can only punt things so far into the future. Bill Belichick was just talking about this on Pat McAfee's show, and he specifically cited the 49ers along with the Saints and your Philadelphia Eagles as three teams where at some point you do have to like reset a little bit. So I do think there's like a bit of urgency. Sure, you got to hit on these rookies and you got to make sure you have young guys contributing. But if you're asking me like, why is there an urgency? I think because of these sort of windows, and with this particular expensive team, this is the time to get it done. Right. And so injuries,
why though?
Because you've invested all this into a team and you haven't won a Super Bowl yet. You got damn close, but you haven't won.
Well, why do you not think this window can last 10 years? I mean, Belichick's lasted 20 years. The Chiefs seem to be on a 15-year run. I think the Niners are not thinking like you're thinking, like, oh, this is it. Everyone keeps saying this is an all. And I know Trent Williams is getting old and Christian McCaffrey's getting old. But, man, they seem to be finding players left and right. And Christian McCaffrey is a running back. Yeah. I'm not sure that is like the most irreplaceable thing. They seem to be saying, okay, we like you, Brandon Ayuk. We don't love you. We're not going to like, maybe it's smart to not give away all this money to Brandon Ayuk and sort of play hardball.
No, but here's the thing. You're telling me that they might be right at the number. So, like, that's the thing. If you really were playing hardball and you thought you were going to get, like, a quote-unquote deal or something, or you were going to try to do something really short-term to, you know, but it doesn't look like – it looks like they're going to end up around what Aiyuk wants. So, what was this
all
about?
Well, no, they're definitely – I mean, I think – it seems like they offered him 29. He's like, I'm holding out for more. So I don't think, obviously, everything the Niners have told you is like, we don't really care if Brandon Aiyuk's here long term or not. They don't see that as a billing zone. They were willing to trade him to Pittsburgh. By the way, they still could trade him. We don't know for sure. They obviously were willing to trade him. Like, they doesn't seem like they know Brandon Aiyuk better than we do. They know their team building better than they do. It doesn't seem like he's priority number one. So I don't know. I feel like you're kind of putting a negative read on everything they do team building when they just seem to draft really well. I mean, where the heck did Brock Purdy come from? We're talking about Brock Purdy. He was Mr. Irrelevant. So why not give them the benefit of the doubt that they know what they're doing and all these things? The only thing that is irreversible is getting old. Like, Trent Williams is getting old. McCaffrey's getting a little old. Kittle's getting old. That stuff is true. But I'm not sure I agree that this is like an all-in, one-or-done year. Like, we say that, but like, do you really, if you're looking at next year's Super Bowl prediction, 2025, it's like, ooh, the Niners are loaded.
Right.
Ooh, 2026, the Niners are loaded. They're going to be loaded, 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 regardless of some, I would say, rather, not trivial things, but like, this seems like short-term stuff that they're working with. It could all go fine. Who knows? Trent Williams, say he comes back, say Aiyuk comes back. Like, what's the problem?
Well, I've asked.
If Feliciano barely made the team.
But like, I guess I would ask the question, what's it all for? Because I'm watching. And again, it
may sustain excellence.
No. Like, what was all the holdout? Like, why couldn't they get something done sooner? You know, if Aiyuk's going to be back and if Trent Williams is going to be back and all of that, again, I'm telling you that the only person who really gets hurt by them not being there is Purdy. Because Purdy would have had another year. If Aiyuk's going to be there anyway, this is another year to get on the same page. He's not being able to get on the same page with Pearsall. Kittle and McCaffrey, these guys aren't going to be practicing. Debo, these guys aren't going to be practicing that much in the preseason. Purdy's the guy who looks like he still needs more developing, seasoning. Everyone does.
Purdy doesn't need more reps with those guys. They've had basically two seasons.
All right. How's it look so far?
Well, he went out there without any other starters, so we don't even know what was going on. Yeah, I mean, there's a legit chance that they have injury problems. I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
But it's not like the lack of work in preseason is an issue here. Is it? Is that what you're worried about? It's a lack of work? Like, Purdy need, like, he's a rookie?
Listen, I don't know what to make of all the up and down with Purdy. It might be nothing. It might be absolutely nothing. But I keep hearing about it. And I don't think it's the media, like, overreacting in San Francisco. They know what they have. I think
like the San Francisco media is not as worried as the national media. Like, San Francisco media is kind of, it feels like they look at the pro. This is 2019.
Yeah.
Like, they completely kind of rebuilt that team that made the Super Bowl, was bleeding in the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter. I think they have a little more faith in this team than I'm hearing.
This is the same team outside of the quarterback.
Really?
And McCaffrey.
I mean, who was he throwing to in that Super Bowl? I felt like
Debo,
it was Emmanuel
Kittle.
Sanders, and I don't know. It's not the same team at all. It's very different.
But here's the thing. But yeah. Here's some of the core people who are still in the same spot. Debo, Kittle,
they brought in
Bosa,
a lot of great players.
Fred Warner. Trent Williams, it's the same core. And I guess where you and I will ultimately always disagree on this is, what's the urgency for the 49ers this year? Like, you don't think there's any.
There's urgency every year when you're a Super Bowl contender, but no, I don't think this is an all-in year like Jerry Jones described. It's not like the Rams with F them picks.
Right.
No, I don't think they view that at all. Not even for a second.
You don't think there's like a human toll of losing in the overtime in the Super Bowl and sort of what that does to a team and how that impacts how you come back the next year and the amount of pressure that's on that? I think you're discounting like the human element of this.
Well, maybe for part of this year, but I'm saying like long term. No, this is not a 1 year like project. They're looking big picture. They're definitely not. I mean, they sort of how they seem to build the team. Like, no, like my argument here is like it's not a 1 year thing. Like, they're not all in for this year. Like, there's no. Or it's better to have Brandon Aiyuk long term flexibility than to sell out just for this season. Like, there's no vibe for me there. Like, why are they going to be contender with Brock Purdy? They're going to pay him $60 million or something, right?
Yeah.
They should expect to be in the NFC Championship game for the next 10 years.
Okay,
but
what happens after you pay your quarterback? Does it get easier or does it get harder? Like, as team building, what we've always been told, and we see this in real time, cuts have to be made. Guys, you know, can't be retained who you want to retain. We always talk about the Kansas City Chiefs. They've had to say goodbye to people. Now, they continue to win, so good for them. But they've had to, they did say goodbye to Tyreek Hill because they couldn't pay him or didn't want to. They have said goodbye to L'Jarius Sneed, who I'm sure they would have loved to have back, because you have to pay a QB.
Yeah, they're still awesome.
They're still awesome, but Mahomes kind of is the great equalizer. Not everyone is so blessed to have Mahomes and Andy Reid and to feel great about that. You know, I think that we're discounting, like, this is the last cheap year of Purdy. And then you get him, and you have all these other guys who are making a lot of money, and then you have to somehow shoehorn a $60 million quarterback. To me, it just gets harder. And I think if John Lynch was sitting right here with us, I think he would admit the same.
It definitely gets harder, but I still think I would bet on Shanahan and Purdy moving forward. It reminds me so much of Andy Reid and Donovan McNabb. Like, Andy Reid made his first NFC title game in, what, 2001, and then through 2008. They had, like, an eight-year run in Philly, and now he's in a 10-year run in whatever, in Kansas City. I mean, he's an incredible run. Yeah, I mean, I think this is a really good drafting team and a really smart team. And I think probably what they're doing with Ayuk, I think all of us would do. Like, did you watch Hard Knocks last night?
I did.
Did you see where Ryan Poles is like, I'm not going to lose my flexibility to trade for Matthew Judon?
Right.
I think we get all excited in March and offseason about getting these guys. But the reality is the smart teams look big picture. And the Niners probably, if you look at individually, there's a logic to every move they're making. And I think the scouting them, yes, are they as hot a Super Bowl pick? Definitely not this year. I think everyone's a little down on them because they came off, lost Super Bowl, very valid point, and they have. They're getting older. They seem injury prone. But still, like, I would not write this team off. In fact, they might be better next year. I have no idea.
I'm not writing them off. Yeah. I'm just saying I don't think anyone could look at the 49ers and be like, they're having a great offseason. And maybe it doesn't matter, but I ask you, who does it generally impact, or who could it impact the most? And to me, it's Purdy. You know, you're putting him out there, first of all, with the backups, which was a little, describe the logic for that for me, because he looked really bad in the preseason game. Granted, it's a preseason game, but why was he out there with the backups?
But is that a problem? I don't know. It feels like a kind of a little thing.
But you think there's logic to everything. I don't know where the logic is to
that. I think
that.
They wanted to get Purdy one preseason game, and it would have been the second game. So, well, now we're getting to, should it play in preseason or not play in preseason? I don't think, like, that's a reason to downgrade
Purdy.
It's just
all the turmoil things that have happened are happening mostly on the offensive side of the ball. And it's not having your left tackle. It's not having Purdy's favorite receiver. Whatever you want to say about all the weapons for the 49ers, the numbers don't lie. Ayuk is a security blanket for that guy. And he's not just security blanket. He's explosive for him. 18 yards per catch. Yeah. The amount of third down catches. How Ayuk keeps the chains moving. I just don't see how any of this helps Purdy to be farting around here with, you know, his favorite receiver, especially if he's actually going to come back and they are going to pay him like a big amount. And it's going to fall in line with all the rest of the wide receiver contracts. It doesn't seem like anything really revolutionary is coming down the pike here.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather, I'm not sure I want you as my GM. I think you're looking, big, small term. Here, the other thing too about their schedule, it's funny. Yeah. They have a tough game to start off with the Jets. Then they basically have an extended preseason. For some bizarre reason, they put all their easy games up front. So they have time. They start off with the Jets. Then they go at Vikings, at Los Angeles, New England, Arizona, Seattle. And then they have a huge game against Kansas City. So there's time to, like, ease into this a little bit. They should probably be, if they're not 3-2 or something going into that Chiefs game, then something went direly wrong. Again, like, this is would you have ever thought when Jimmy G was the quarterback in 2019, like, they were going to be able to reinvent this thing with Mr. Irrelevant in the draft?
No, especially they didn't think that. They traded three picks for Trey Lance.
Right, that's
they
what
never
I'm saying.
Thought this.
And it's not really because of Brock Purdy. It's because, man, they just know what they're doing. They're drafting Kyle Shanahan players and bringing them in. Like, nobody saw Hufanga coming. Nobody really, like, Ayuk fell to 25 in the draft. Deebo was a second rounder. I think they can reinvent themselves pretty well. And, you know, honestly, like, you should be worried about something completely different.
What's that?
That Kyle Shanahan doesn't seem to know what to call in a game. Like, when the big moment comes, that dude, like, honestly, he's so Andy Reid. It reminds me so much of him in Philly. Like, oh my God, you're a great coach. You have this great offense, but then you screwed up at the biggest moments.
Yeah, see, I think, like, you bring up the Eagles with Andy Reid.
It's so similar.
I know, but that doesn't make 49er fans feel great. You realize that.
Well, Andy eventually won in Kansas City.
Yeah,
that was part
of
my narrative.
Yeah, somewhere else. Like,
but it took him a long time to figure out. He actually started getting a lot of help on the in-game stuff. Like, Shanahan will grow. He's in his 40s. I mean, I trust Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch a lot. I think they're a really good duo. And I think this is great teams.
You trust them with 5 minutes left to go in the Super Bowl?
No, I trust him in team building.
Got it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think this is a one-year thing. I think they're going to be heard from for a very long time.
It hasn't been a one-year thing, though. We've been hearing from them.
But you're painting sort of like a Jerry Jones all in this year, you know? Like, they really need to, like, put all their eggs in a basket. I like they're thinking long-term with Brandon Ayuk. They're like, we're not going to hand you the keys to the kingdom. Like, you're our number two receiver. You're cool. We like you. We don't love you. We drafted your replacement. He's hurt. Otherwise, you'd probably be gone by now.
Well, if they really wanted flexibility, just give him a couple extra guaranteed dollars for this year and then let him go.
Sure, they're trying that. I mean, I
think his contract's going to end up being just like all the other wide receiver contracts. 4 years, lots of guaranteed money.
Yeah, it's going to be DJ Moore 2.0.
Right. So that's not, like, that's investing. That's not, like, that's investing right. And having another guy who's going to be a $10 million or a year player. Which they have, like, seven of those. Which is, like, that's eventually you are going to have to rely on Ayuk because you did make an investment. Yeah. And I guess, like, you and I will, again, we'll disagree on this. I don't think there's a coaching staff with more pressure on them than the 49ers. I can't even imagine. Even the guys who, like, are on the quote-unquote hot seat, like Mike McCarthy, I think there's more on Shanahan.
Oh, no way. Shanahan ain't going anywhere.
People think Shanahan is, like, the most, like, the greatest offensive mind.
Totally.
People think McCarthy is, like, a doofus.
You know,
there's way more
spot
pressure.
The lie.
There's way more pressure on Kyle Shanahan to finally make good on this, like, genius guru kind of thing. If, you know, Mike McCarthy is, like, one step away from a diner in Pittsburgh.
Well, right. But there's more pressure in the sense that Shanahan is going to be there for as long as Shanahan wants to be there, I would think. Mike McCarthy's literally on the hot seat. So I think you're getting caught up in the moment here to say there's more pressure on Shanahan.
McCarthy's already won a Super Bowl.
Honestly, a better scenario for Shanahan is to go 10-6 and not be in the NFC title game. Like, they'll be, or 10-7, sorry. The worst thing for Shanahan is to get right up to the brink of the Super Bowl and lose it again. That would be a disaster.
That's weird logic.
You know what I mean, though. Like, sometimes, like, Shanahan is now, we're judging him on these high profile, deep playoff mistakes. I think, honestly, Shanahan obviously is not going to be on the hot seat. I mean, that's in any time soon. Maybe within 5 years. He might be him and McVay are probably two of the most secure coaches in the NFL.
Okay, McVay's already won. And McCarthy's already won. Whatever we think of Mike McCarthy.
Is there a person alive who would take Mike McCarthy over Kyle Shanahan?
You know, but it doesn't matter. I'm talking about for Shanahan, for this coaching staff. They have to feel the most pressure of any coaching staff in the league. For all those reasons you said, it got so close. You just said Kyle Shanahan would be better off losing early in the playoffs. Well, that's what Mike McCarthy keeps doing. So, and again, he's already got the Lombardi. So I think Shanahan feels it more than anyone. Also because people are pinning these big losses on him. How often do we pin a Super Bowl loss on a coordinator?
Right.
He gets that for the Falcons loss on the resume. I don't even know. Is there another coordinator in history who we pin a big loss that on?
No, I can't think of anyone.
Right.
But that being said, that's why if you're Kyle Shanahan, you better call John Lynch and be like, hey, we got to keep this team good for a long time. I need as many bites of the apple as I can. Yeah, listen, what you're saying is just not true. Mike McCarthy is under intense pressure in Dallas. I mean, crazy pressure.
Yeah, I don't
think... Wait, what do you think is going to happen there? If they're not good, he's gone, mid-season.
No, Jerry doesn't. Jerry will not pay people
bad,
to not work.
If they're bad, it's going to be bad.
Well, let's keep it on the 49ers. 855-212-4227. You're welcome to call in on the pressure on Kyle Shanahan. Is all this offseason turmoil hurting Brock Purdy the most? Jacked Purdy. You guys seen this dude? He's huge. Swole, as they say. Have you seen his arms? It's crazy. He looks like a totally different dude. 855-212-4227. Okay, we start off with the 49ers. You're welcome to weigh in. We know we're on in the Bay Area. Coming up, we do have a surreal moment from last night with Hard Knocks and an opportunity missed for the Bears. We'll get to that next. It's Maggie and Perloff.
Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff. Up late last night, two things going on for me.
What do you got?
The show Umbrella Academy came back to Netflix. Probably my favorite Netflix show of all time. It's just insane, awesome. I was watching that, and then I had to flip over to Hard Knocks on Max. And Hard Knocks, I had heard whisperings, because I think they had talked about it on the podcast, that Big Cat was going to be featured on Hard Knocks.
Part of my take. Your guy.
Barstool Sports. That was insane. That I've never seen any media member get as much glow up in Hard Knocks in the history of the world. I mean,
they're popular guys.
Yeah, I mean, it was funny because they gave a little love to the NFL Network guys, Kyle Brandt and Peter Schrager. They give a lot of love to Kay Adams. And then, boom, 10 minutes of Big Cat and PFD quizzing Caleb Williams. I'm like, what is this? Did you watch it last night and wonder why they spent so much time on that crazy interview? PFD's like, if you could press a button to kill a series of Bears, or kill one Bears fan to win 10 straight Super Bowls, would you do it? I'm like, this is getting into Hard Knocks now?
Honestly, what a question. And Caleb Williams basically didn't answer it. It's an amazing what if.
He sort of answered. He started pressing an imaginary button. he would do the right thing and kill the fan.
Is
it really even a question? I mean, it's just one fan.
They said
10
that,
Super Bowls.
They said there would be fans just volunteering.
Yeah, totally.
Because that's how bad the Bears have been.
Yeah, no, I didn't think it was even a tough question. I mean, that was, yeah, of course, one fan. I mean, you could pick an older fan, right?
It'd just be funny if it's like, all right, who?
Name someone. I think if you pick somebody who's, you know, on the back nine, what's the difference? For 10 Super Bowls, we're talking 10 Super Bowls.
Murder or Super Bowl? It's a fair trade.
Is it murder, though? I mean, is any jury in Chicago going to convict them, Ryan?
No, but if you're willingly killing someone.
Yeah, I mean, Caleb didn't directly answer, but he answered without answering. He would do it. And that's what I want out of my quarterback. I want him to be willing to commit a capital crime in order to win a Super Bowl. You got to be all in.
Yeah.
But one thing.
That's the definition of all
in. Hard Knocks is such a celebration of Caleb Williams. It's like,
it's amazing.
If there was any doubt, like, do we like this guy? Basically, they might as well like show his Canton bust, his Hall of Fame bust. And I've never seen such a ridiculous glow up for a rookie quarterback in my life, but Caleb Williams.
Weirdly, it feels like he kind of deserves it. Yeah, it's not the same as when the Browns had Baker Mayfield number one and they were doing they had like a cool van. This is like Caleb Williams is like the second coming, and he might be. I'm kind of buying all of it because Caleb looks so good.
But, yeah, I know. But we do this with Hard Knocks. We're like, well, this team's going to win 14 games.
Well, and then they've got a Dunze, though. Like, it's good.
But they're not winning 14 games, Maggie. He is a rookie quarterback, and they are the Bears. So they're in the problem is if they were in the NFC South or the AFC South, we'd be like, yeah, let's go. But they're stuck in this crazy division. So just remember that before you buy that. Are you buying the Hard Knocks hype again, Maggie? I've lectured you about this before.
Well, I never bought it when it was like the Rams Chargers joint one. I don't know. I don't buy all of them, but this one I'm buying. The vibes seem really good. But here's two other things from Hard Knocks last night. One is that it looks like the Bears were pretty close to trading for Matthew Judon, who eventually went to the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah.
But here's the crazy part about it. You're seeing Ryan Poles, the GM, say, well, we need to get him under contract if we're going to trade for him.
Yeah.
Then he goes to Atlanta, and he's just playing without a new contract. So I started thinking to myself, if you're Judon, what's the better situation? Because he's 32 years old. So do you want to go play with Kirk Cousins coming off an Achilles? Maybe it's an easier division in the NFC South. It definitely is. Or do you want to go get on the Caleb Williams train? And like that thing could be paying off really fast. So you do well there. Now maybe you're part of Bears Super Bowl lore. And you could be making money off of that for the rest of your life. Look at the 85 Bears. All those guys are still dining out on something from 40 years ago. If I were Judon and I'm not taking a new contract anyway, I think I would have chosen the Bears.
Well, I mean, Atlanta is going to be in the playoffs this year, though. You're going to play longer this year. You're 32. You're going to get a big shot this year and maybe next year. So is that more valuable? There's Bears and they're not contending this year.
Like, who's the more stable situation? I think I attach myself to the quarterback, though.
Well, yeah, but I feel like, first of all, there's nothing wrong with Atlanta. They're a young, kind of talented team in a super easy division. I don't know.
Play inside, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think for Judon, who's 32, like, you really got it. If you're being smart about it, I think you'd take Atlanta this year. You have one or two shots, and this is, like, Atlanta's division to lose. They really should be in the playoffs. I would take Atlanta
for this year. The Bears are going to get a lot of attention. You know,
I mean, when do you think the Bears pass the Packers and the Lions?
I don't know, but I'm just saying, if you want to, you're going to be playing some big games. We always talk about Atlanta And we're on in Atlanta, and mm-hmm. we love you, Atlanta, but you'll say it all the time. The pro team in Atlanta is the Georgia Bulldogs, and there's like a care factor. And
Yeah, but I'm not sure that that's the key ingredient here. First of all, Atlanta needs him a lot more than Chicago needs him. Chicago's already got Montez Sweat. Atlanta has been so desperate, like he's going to be a conquering hero. They have a great chance. They could get the number one, probably not the number one seed, but they're going to be a very good team this
year. Have we seen Kirk Cousins? Is he even around? I don't know.
Yeah, apparently he looks fine. I don't know. Around? I mean,
working on that playlist.
How hard is it to win?
Of course, the Jimmy Eat World.
How hard is it to win the NFC South?
And like bangers.
We have how many people here? We can find seven people off the street and go 8-9 and capture that NFC South. This is not Judah and like Atlanta. Both are good situations, but I think Atlanta is just a little better right now. He's got 2 years. He's 32.
So the other small thing about Hard Knocks, actually, maybe we'll save that. My other observation about Hard Knocks, we'll save that for a little bit later. It has to do with Caleb Williams. But CeeLo is here, and he's got updates for us. What's going on today?
All right, we're sponsored by Progressive Insurance. Protect your family, your phone, and your furry friends with life, electronic device, and pet health insurance. If I could just piggyback off the Judon stuff there. Two things, because I remembered reading this in the story. Now, I understand sometimes players aren't exactly telling the truth, but he was asked about the reports of having the choice between the Falcons and the Bears at his press conference the other day. And he said, don't believe everything you read or everything you see. So maybe it wasn't that cut and dry. And to your point about the pro team in Atlanta being the Georgia Bulldogs, he showed up to his press conference wearing a Georgia t-shirt. And his first words out of his mouth were, go Dogs.
Go Dogs. Yeah. So he knows what's up.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing. Yes.
I got to say one thing about what you said about that trade deal. I wonder if there is context and gray areas that are always missing these reports about what actually happened. CeeLo, thank you and I think alike. Like just the fact that like, oh, okay, maybe that's what happened. Just because you see on Hard Knocks does not mean a single thing because that is a string of lies. I watched the Giants off season one. That was the most curated bunch of garbage I've ever seen in my life. Like what's really happening way, way, way behind the scenes might be a little different than all these reported trades. I'm just saying.
Well, all I know is I watched one of the heads of like their scouting department or whoever that guy was, like basically having to make Ryan Poles feel better. It's like, hey, don't forget we made a great trade for a guy at the draft. Like, he had to like pump him up because of how bad Poles was feeling about losing out on Judah.
Okay.
So I think there was real interest.
That was not real. That was a stage scene. Matt Eberflus starting off the show.
Actors.
Matt Eberflus starting off the show talking with Caleb Williams about what he did well. That, honestly, did they have a scriptwriter for that scene? I'm like, this is the phoniest garbage I've ever seen in my life.
Think the head coach talks to the quarterback.
Oh my
That's
God.
Phony.
You don't think they were performing for the camera? It's like it was perfectly lit, much better lit than us, I might add. And it was like Eberflus, it looked like he was reading cue cards. So now what are you learning as a young quarterback? Nobody talks like that. That was ridiculous.
Well, they probably keep the cursing a little to a minimum. But I guess you don't think that Eberflus and Caleb Williams would like sit down and watch film together?
And talk like that? Not in a million years. That was so – you don't think they noticed the camera crew like 4 feet away and changed their behavior?
They had a guy in an Eagle Speedo thong thing singing a song. Like I don't think they're worried about being that PC.
Not PC. They want to look like they're like – football, like Matt Eberflus is like, now tell me what you learned here, young man.
Yeah.
It was
ridiculous. Eberflus is kind of awkward like that, but
awkward like that. That was phony. And there was a lot of Ryan Poles things that were staged too. Anyway, I agree. Like there's way more subtlety to these deals. Even Brandon Ayuk and the Steelers deal, like we keep on hearing these deals. Oh, did the Steelers offer him this or that? I just think that these deals are much more fluid and who knows. What did Judon say?
He said, don't believe everything you read or that you see or you hear. So I don't necessarily
think he's... What about smell
and taste? Yeah, right. That's
well, I think he's saying like whatever happened in New England, it didn't go down exactly as
being
portrayed by the media.
I don't think he's shooting down the Bears' interest, but the idea that it was left up to him to choose. I'm guessing New England probably got the better pick from Atlanta, and that's the way they went. I don't know. That's pure speculation on my part, but sounds like it wasn't strictly up to Judon to choose.
Right.
Maybe both teams were interested, and they just went with the better package. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah.
But in any event, yesterday we heard quite a bit from Tua Tagovailoa ripping into former Dolphins head coach Brian Flores. This morning, you get the response from Flores, who did speak yesterday. Of course, now the defensive coordinator for the Vikings. First things first.
Genuinely happy for the success that Tua's had. And I really wish him nothing but the best.
Now, having said that,
you think the guys on the Hard Knocks are lying? That is a lie.
There were a lot of long pauses as he was gathering his thoughts throughout the course of this media availability. Wasn't reading from a script or notes. But referring to him as, quote, a terrible person, a bit of a humbling moment.
Look, I'm human, so that hit me in a way that, wasn't, I wouldn't say it was, positive for me. But at the same time, I've got to use that and say, hey, how can I grow from that? How can I be better?
He said he's done a lot of reflecting on this as well as his time in Miami and feels he's grown. So, I mean, take that for what it's worth. He's obviously in a different role now with Minnesota. Whether he gets a chance to head coach again down the road somewhere remains to be seen.
What blitz is he using against Caleb Williams? It's what I want to know.
Right, that's what's important.
Yeah, like Brian Flores did give a little bell check. He's like, I'm more focused on the Vikings defense and a player I'm not even coaching. Yes, yes. Act like a pro. And unlike Tua.
A couple of his defensive players show up basically at his side at the press conference to show some support. So.
If I'm the Dolphins, I'm glad I'm not playing the Vikings this year because it would be nothing but all-out blitzes every single play. So it's like, I don't care what you do. Hit that guy.
I would think Tua is smart enough. Had they been on the schedule, I don't think you're getting those comments in that interview.
That's an interesting point.
Right? I would hope you'd have the foresight.
I
you don't want that
smoke. Tua lost some weight.
No?
I think...
Oh, man.
No. He would have probably thought about that if Flores was... I think he might have been a little bit more careful.
I think he got $200 million. It was just like double birds.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, if they've been playing?
Kick rocks. Like, I win here, you lose. But, again, I don't know. We'll talk about this a little bit more. What's at stake for Tua now that he put himself out there?
Yep. All right, our daily dose of Aaron Rodgers. Thoughts on his second training camp with the Jets, this time, of course, coming off the torn Achilles.
I would say the camp is much harder this year and maybe the hardest in the last 7 or 8 of my career. I knew that. I had a little insight coming into camp that that's what Robert wanted to do. So I think it's been good for us.
It's interesting because he just recently was talking about how things used to be done, like back in the day, training camp wise, when he was a younger player and how much
like
more they play in the preseason and all that. So now he talks about it being one of the harder ones he's had. So they've avoided serious injury to this point. A ton of reps for the starters. I was reading a story, I guess they estimated over 300 so far in camp, which I guess is on the high side. And they've got a joint practice with the Giants today. What could go wrong? Ahead of their annual preseason game Saturday night. Rodgers still unsure if he's going to play in that game. He's leaving it up to the aforementioned Robert Saleh, head coach of the Jets. As the CeeDee Lamb holdout continues with the Cowboys, Jerry Jones said Tuesday that the two sides are having, quote, promising talks on a contract extension. He thinks they'll get something done, but he didn't want to speak for Lamb. He feels that their current offer shows they want him to be there long term, whatever that means. Maybe some
all
jockey.
In.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if this is their all in offer, but he sounds at least optimistic that he will be in there sooner rather than later, perhaps with the season opener looming not too far away now. Baseball, how about the longest game of the season in terms of innings, at least in the Bronx, and it went the way of the visitors last night.
Swung and drilled deep right field, down the line, fair ball, two bounces up against the wall. Schneeman will score. Thomas with a double and his first RBI as a Guardian. And the Guardians take a 4-3 lead here in the 12th.
Tom Hamilton, Guardians Radio's Cleveland plated 6 runs in the 12th and then finish off the Yankees 9-5 in a matchup of division leaders. I read that I'm like 12 innings, that's it? Longest game of the year? I guess that extra runner starting on second base has really done the trick. All
Remember,
10
like,
and 11 extra inning games.
It's like we used to have 16, 17. And we just go forever. You got your backup catcher on the mound. Like just all types of silliness. Basically calling dudes out of the stands to come and pitch.
I mean, that's basically what the Yankees. I think they used 9 pitchers last night because their starter went, he exited early with some back tightness. So there was a lot of... They were basically down to like the last bench player on both sides, and they had a million runners left on base on both sides. But Cleveland does walk away a winner in a game where both Juan Soto and Aaron Judge homered for the Yankees. They went back-to-back in the first inning, number 45 for Judge. How about the Staten Island Little League coach getting after Judge? Did you see this at all?
I did see it.
Yeah, I mean, very strange. He basically ripped into Judge for not visiting his team in Williamsport Sunday. He had the Little League Classic or waving at them at some point from, I guess, the on-deck circle or whatever. To the point where the Yankees released a lengthy statement last night to shoot down some of what the coach said, got it wrong, didn't know the schedule of what the Yankees were asked to do by the league, and they had all these other players that did visit with them, and very strange. The coach said, after we win this thing, they ain't taking pictures with us either, only Aaron Boone and the guys who showed up. And then they went out and lost last night. They got eliminated, over. Very
that's
strange.
That's a very New York thing. Like,
yeah.
To be all full of bravado and like think Aaron Judge, you know, he's too good for me.
Yeah.
So who's this bum?
Very outspoken.
Mr. Staten Island thing.
Crazy. Yeah.
I guess. Just to circle back, you guys started this segment with the Hard Knocks. So Ryan Poles was on. Is it Hoagie and John's or Hogan John's? I don't know this podcast. So they're obviously doing the training camp edition of Hard Knocks this year. But as far as what the Giants did with the offseason Hard Knocks, you just heard Parloff kind of rip into that a little bit. Poles not sure that we're going to get that every year.
And I struggle sometimes just with conversations, you know, about players. And, you know, there's a business side of things. And we try to be transparent as possible. But I don't know if that needs to get out to everybody.
And he was basically making the point that teams aren't going to want to open up and show as much as the Giants did. And I think there he was maybe specifically referring to the Saquon Barkley stuff and the way that that was portrayed. So, I mean, I don't know that teams are going to have a choice if they want to continue it. But sounds like maybe other teams and GMs around the league, it wasn't exactly well received.
Yeah, I could see that. They were embarrassed, right? They got a lot of negative reviews. The Giants did. I think it got better as the thing went on, but at first we're like, wow, like they're saying really surface comments about these draft prospects. They're like, oh, wow, this guy had 1,200 yards rushing. You see this guy? I'm like, that's your analytic?
Honestly, I don't know why the Giants were so hell-bent on doing this offseason one when the training camp one gives you the best commercial.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good point.
From what I've heard, and our local guys here in New York were at Giants camp yesterday. John Mara, co-owner, has been very against having cameras in and around training camp, does not want the distraction. So
yeah, he's wrong on this.
Yeah, like, I mean,
this is another Giants miscalculation, yeah. But this is silly. Like if you're on your 100th season, you're trying to do this big celebration, and the season's probably going to be pretty bad. The best thing you can do is at least try to hype up the guys. Like, this is, everyone looks good in training camp for the most part.
You got neighbors in camp making all kinds of plays. You could focus on that.
All 32 teams don't want Hard Knocks. There's never been
a
team.
True. Yeah.
There's never, ever been a team or
maybe the Cowboys.
They're one team.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jerry does want.
You're right. 31 teams who don't want Hard Knocks.
They made a freaking series about the cheerleaders.
I mean, like,
definitely want this stuff.
The Colts show every single thing that happens in their building. They have a 24/7 Hard Knocks for some reason. Chris Ballard has a camera on him at all times. So there are teams that show all this stuff anyway. Like, you know, those draft night videos, like you see all the video of them, the good picks. Like the Rams, I've seen the video of them drafting Puka Nacua like 100 times.
Yeah.
But never you see the third round pick who flamed out in training camp.
Yeah, who cares, right?
But so anyway, it's all curated. You're right about the Giants. So like, why would they be afraid of training camp?
I thought that the offseason was not great for them. I didn't think they look very good. CeeLo, thank you so
all
much. 855-212-4227. That's the number to get in touch with the show. Coming up, this is either the dumbest idea ever or the most innovative. There is no in between. We'll get to that next. Got to hand it to Mike Gundy, man. His particular brand of tone deafness, like, really is
BS. I think that's the word that would come to mind.
It's just so consistent. But man, did Oklahoma State, they may have stumbled upon something pretty brilliant here. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff with you. So we brought you the story yesterday from a couple days ago of Mike Gundy getting really upset with agents now representing college football players for coming during the season and during fall camp with their hands out asking for more money, right? And he's like, stop calling me. Stop asking for more money. The deal is the deal. We're closed for business. The transfer portal is closed. Then yesterday, we get the story that Oklahoma State is now going to be putting QR codes on their uniforms so that you can pause the game at some point or do it while it's live. You can scan the QR code off the TV while Oklahoma State is playing a football game, and that will take you directly to the Oklahoma State Collective where you can donate money. So players, stop asking for money, but we will literally be asking for money all season long. Like, you can't ask me for money in the season, but then I'm going to turn around and ask the fan base or whoever's watching on TV that feels inclined, please give us money. It's a wild turn.
Yeah.
However, it's pretty brilliant.
Yeah, but it's so sickening. I mean, it's like, I hate this raising NIL money from fans and now trying to like trap people in some sort of easier way to make it like, why is I watch a college football game. There's the 10 biggest companies, Google, Apple, like, give that money to the players. Right. Why do I have to give the money if I'm an Oklahoma State fan? I don't have half the money of these corporations. So basically, because the coaches and the ADs and the 47 administrators want to line their pockets, so the money has to come out of me, and somebody's watching the game and care, like, this is bad. This is not good.
Well, boosters have existed forever. So they've, yeah, but they've like always
boosters,
been asking
like
the
rich
fan
boosters,
base, right?
not like, you know, Jimmy Smith sitting at home. I just think this is like, I don't know. It just rubs me the wrong way.
Oh, I get it. Yeah. But I think they've learned a thing, probably a thing or two from politics. You know, how many emails do we all get? $5 and this will help my candidate, or $10. I think they're trying to do this thing sort of bootstrapped. But as sort of hypocritical as this is from Gundy, and just like how kind of gross maybe it feels a little bit, can I tell you the one team who should be doing this more than anybody? They probably won't, because maybe they think they're above it. But the one team who should be doing this more than anyone is Notre Dame. The Notre Dame fan base, I remember our former colleague at Sports Illustrated, Pete Thamel, once told me there are people out there with Notre Dame tattoos on their body who couldn't find South Bend with a map. There's something about the Notre Dame fan base, Perloff, that is just, it's coast to coast. It's, you know, people, it's part of their identity. You know, Notre Dame hits in a way that might be different for certain fans. It's such a national fan base. If Notre Dame put the QR codes on their helmets and stuff, I think the donations are rolling in from coast to coast.
Yeah, I don't know if a guy in New York who follows Notre Dame is the same as somebody in Georgia who follows the Bulldogs. Don't you think like the loyalty of the local base? I mean, I think Notre Dame, who gets the most money from boosters? Like, I'm sure Notre Dame is up there. They're probably top five already. Right. But are they better than all the other programs? We'd have to ask like Andy Staples. I think there are a lot of loyal fans. Like, if
I think
you,
there's a lot of casual fans who like Notre Dame. That's
right,
what I'm saying.
But like, what's the more? Oh, so you're saying like spread it out?
Yeah, if you're trying to get $5 here, $10 here, $20, $100, whatever. I think Notre Dame would be the smartest fan base to do this.
Right, but are they waking up and having 20 hours of Notre Dame in their life? If you're in Alabama, you're having a lot of Tide. I don't know. You know, it's interesting.
Will this work?
It might work. I mean, the funny thing is, like, Alabama and Georgia seem to have a slight problem on their hand.
What's
like
that?
Like, they don't seem to be the NIL kings. It seems like Miami, you know, EJ's team, Miami, there's a few teams. A&M, Louisville is like red hot on the NIL. The NIL seems to follow a different rhythm. Like, that's, yeah, Alabama and Georgia have been dominant, but all of a sudden, shoot, we can't get enough money. These Texas schools, UT is getting a lot. Like, so I you bring up a great point. Like, what's the formula? Notre Dame could dominate if they wanted to, probably. But look at the NIL, right? There's some big collectives that would surprise you. I mean, why is Miami's been burning money for the last 5 years?
Yeah, well, take a knee and maybe you get a little more money. Sorry,
yeah, there's some surprising programs. And I think it's a systematic. I think you hit on a good point. It's like, who has the best system to raise money? It's not who you think it is. And Alabama, one thing about Alabama, they're not a huge state. You might have a point. Like, if you're going to open up to fans, there are much bigger places. I mean, think of Texas is gigantic. California is gigantic. Florida is very big. So it's interesting how this NIL thing is still sorting out. But just like these QR codes, come on, dude. As you started out, like, you just were railing against players asking for more. Meanwhile, you're like, get $20 million, whatever. Mike Gundy gets Gundy. $9 million a year.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear from you, Mike Gundy. That's ridiculous.
It's bad timing, I think, to say, players, stop coming to me with your hand out, and then literally putting your hand out to America. Like, it's very unique, only, I think, to Mike Gundy. Only he could do something like this, or I don't know. There's another part of this. When I first read the story, I thought this was going to be so curated that if I like am watching the left tackle from Oklahoma State and I think he's doing great, I can scan his QR code and I can specifically donate to him.
That was my first thought too. It's not the case.
It's not the case. You just go straight to the collective.
So, yeah, that annoys me too.
That would be awesome.
Because they're presenting it as if you can reward individual play.
But it goes to the collective.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
You don't get, it's not a boutique.
Hey, how about
boutique.
That Dr. Pepper ad goes to the collective and not to the AD?
Well,
I mean, how many houses
to the
do
choir
these guys need? This is ridiculous.
Well, when they become employees, then they'll be able to split that money most likely, or have a union or something like
we'll
that.
We'll see. There's still a long way to go.
One quarterback putting himself squarely in the crosshairs this upcoming season. Lots and lots of pressure after he called out a former coach. We'll get to that next. It's Maggie and Perloff.